You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Spin Rate, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. That's right. This is Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and we are here talking about your Toronto Blue Jays here in the early days of the offseason. But there is no offseason in baseball. Just like there's no offseason for me doing the housekeeping thing where I say, go to theathletic.com/spinrate and subscribe to The Athletic if you don't already. This is the time. This is transaction season. You want to read about potential trade matches or guys to sign or what the state of the 40-man roster is. You don't want to read about that. That's not something that you should really be concerned about. Arizona Fall League about to kick off. Stay tuned on this channel for more about that. But in the meantime, subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/spinrate to give you a tidy deal. You will let them know that we sent you. Everybody's happy. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, Podbean. I'm all out of podcast providers. And if you have subscribed to the show from this season, from seasons past, thank you. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to co-host of Spinrate, Caitlin. And it means a lot to our almost third man in the booth here, vying with the Zoobs for regular friend of the podcast status. If you've been a subscriber to the show, you've heard him on the show before. He is my friend, and I'm excited to talk to him today. His name is Jonah Bierenbaum. Jonah, Mr. Bierenbaum, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. Anytime I can be mentioned in the same breath as one Andrew Zuber, I am honored. And it's always a privilege to join you, my friend.
It was a privilege to... So one of the many reasons that we have been talking about doing this, Cam and I have been talking about doing this, go get Jonah, we'll get Jonah on. But you and I got to see each other in real life today. We drank high octane coffee and hung out, and we essentially did a dry run of this podcast, because those are the kind of losers and lunatics that we are, that we haven't seen each other in however long, and we haven't been able to talk about other things. And then here we are being like, so what do you think they're going to do with Matz? What do you think they should do with Steven Matz? And those are the kind of things that we talk about. So let us talk about that thing. And I'm going to ask you a question that is sort of, yeah, now you copy and paste that in there, Cam. I see you. Here's a question for you, Jonah. What does a successful Blue Jays offseason look like? So the reason I'm asking you this before I let you answer is that Caitlin McGrath, co-host of Spin Rate, she wrote an article. She's a journalist after all. That was a 10-step plan for a successful offseason. So she's got her opinions on what makes a successful offseason for the Blue Jays. And I'd love to know what you think makes for a successful offseason for these Toronto Blue Jays.
I think that if they're able to retain one of Marcus Semien or Robbie Ray, that would be hugely successful. And I think that the other additions, the other machinations that they do, would be icing on the cake, because you look at this team as it was constituted at season's end, post Alec Manoah promotion, post trade deadline addition of Jose Berríos, and it was an exceptionally complete team. They played plus 600 ball in the second half, and that wasn't, merely a byproduct of playing the Orioles a disproportionate amount of the time. They're just a really, really incredibly, demonstrably talented baseball team at season's end. They're a team that, had they made the postseason, had a very legitimate shot of making and winning the World Series. So I think that if you can retain, one of the two massively critical impending free agents who were so instrumental to their success in 2021, that's a pretty successful offseason. You bring back one of those two guys, they're going to be really, really good at worst. You find a way to bring back both of those guys, they're going to be unequivocally one of the best teams in baseball. But I think that there are pathways to them being a juggernaut without necessarily re-signing both those guys. And if you simply bring back one of them, I think that they're going to be in an incredibly advantageous position for 2022 and beyond. And it would be hard not to see the offseason as a success if Marcus Semien is back playing every day for the Blue Jays next year, or if Robbie Ray is potentially starting on opening day.
So that you've not answered my question, but if dollars aside, is there one that you think needs, one of the two big name free agents that the Blue Jays are facing, is there one that they should prioritize in your mind over the other?
Yeah. And I'm pretty confident in saying that it should be Marcus Semien. In his last two full seasons, he has eclipsed 6.5 wins above replacement. He's a middle infielder who has, you know, corner infield power. He plays every single day, and that's not unique to 2021. He has tremendous durability. The intangibles are lauded about by everyone within the organization and everyone outside of the organization. And just from an investment standpoint, I'm much more comfortable giving a 9-figure contract to a high floor position player who at his worst is going to be giving you 2 marginal wins a year. As much as I do believe Robbie Ray made substantive changes to his delivery this year that enabled him to pound the strike zone with unprecedented regularity and throw harder, he's also a 30-year-old starting pitcher who gets by on velocity and has a tremendous volatility in his track record. And, you know, if it were up to me, I would absolutely, without hesitation, be giving that bag to Marcus Semien over Robbie Ray in the event that they could only sign one. But they can absolutely afford to spend both. This is a team that beyond 2023 only has George Springer's money on the books. Now, obviously, if you're doing the long-term financial calculus and you're earmarking money for extensions for potentially Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, guys like that, you know, you don't necessarily want to spend all that cash that you've sort of designated for future expenditures. But, you know, they absolutely can afford to bring them both back, and that would be great. Having said that, ultimately, if they could only sign one, it would definitely be Semien in my mind.
I think I agree. I think that Semien ticks the boxes in terms of who am I more likely to want to give my money to in terms of risk, in terms of value, and in terms of need. I think that that there's just the downside for Marcus Semien is as you said, a high floor middle reliever. He excelled playing second base. He is more than adept at playing shortstop defensively. So there's second base is a position that you can, I think, age pretty well into, especially now in the game where you don't get blown up, right? The guys aren't getting shit sent into left field, which, as I've said before, I miss. I will not lie. I think it's great when people get exploded at second base. But safety first, and safety of a long career for Marcus Semien, I'm all for. I agree with you, and this is something that you and I spoke about before, and it's also something Caitlin and I spoke about last time we spoke, which is on last week's episode, about the way that Robbie Ray uses his slider. Is he's not a two-pitch pitcher, you know, as we talked about, that pitch has so many dimensions to it. And if he's able to continue to throw it to both sides of the plate against both handed hitters, that's a huge weapon. And to call it a single pitch or to call him a two-pitch pitcher does him a great disservice. That said, there is a ton of risk in any starter, especially a starter who as recently as last year walked the ballpark. And I know this sounds now like we are already talking ourselves out of Robbie Ray. Like, we didn't like that guy anyway. Like, Austin Martin can't hit. Glad he's gone. Like, that's not where I'm coming from. But if there's one bag to distribute, There's such a reduced amount of risk for a guy to be an impact player along with the rest of that core. So I guess that's where I think, and I guess I'll put it back to you then. Is it that you're more in favor, I guess, of Simeon or more afraid of Ray?
I think I'm just more in favor of Simeon, but at the same time, and look, I want to be very clear. I am not casting aspersions on Robbie Ray. I think that, the way he transformed himself this year was absolutely incredible. And I think that he has legitimately made changes that are sustainable and going to lead to sustained success. However, if the Blue Jays are prepared to spend $100 million on a starting pitcher, why not go out and sign Max Scherzer to a shorter term deal, mitigate a lot of the risk that comes with signing Robbie Ray, who historically has not been a strike thrower. And I just think there are legitimate concerns, which isn't to say that Robbie Ray is regression bound and going to be bad moving forward. I'm a huge fan of Marcus Semien, because why wouldn't you be? And B, I think that there are maybe safer ways to invest in the rotation with comparable upside.
So let's talk about that rotation then. So with or without Robbie Ray and with or without Steven Matz, which I think would be very unlikely to re-sign both of those two individuals in particular, they're going to have some holes to fill. So do you imagine it is a successful offseason if the Blue Jays fill one of those rotation spots with money via free agency? There, as Caitlin points out in her piece, there are a lot of kind of very famous names. And I know how you feel about, say, Max Scherzer, which is similar to how a lot of people feel. And I thought this was a good line from a Yankee fan friend of mine, which was like, offer Max Scherzer like 2 years and $80 million and dare him to turn it down. Dare him to turn it down. But, you know, between the Verlanders and Clayton Kershaw is not going to be a free agent. He'll never wear another jersey for his entire career. Kevin Gausman, you know, Marcus Stroman, who's already kind of been like, hey, what's up, guys? I'm happy, open to a reunion, which I don't think that's as likely. That's even less likely than Clayton Kershaw. But, or do you think that the Blue Jays are more likely to go with, find the next Steven Matz, maybe on the free agent or trade, on the trade front, rather than kind of going through a more, traditional route to filling some of those spots?
I think given the top end strength of their rotation, even absent Robbie Ray, with Alek Manoah, with Jose Berrios, with Hyunjin Ryu, I would be surprised if they spent.
I'm waiting for you to list the top end guy there.
I wondered if I could sneak him past you. But much like he cannot sneak a fastball past a major league hitter, I couldn't get that one past you. I would be surprised if there was a big outlay for a free agent starting pitcher that wasn't Robbie Ray, as much as, you know, I was moments ago extolling the virtues of spending big on Max Scherzer. I could definitely see them taking, the Steven Matz kind of route, where you take a reclamation project and try to, you know, get 30 quality starts out of them. But I also think that there's a wealth of sort of those guys available in free agency this year, whereas last year there was not. And, you know, last year they had to give up Sean Reed Foley and Yensi Diaz to go get Steven Matz. And this year they can, you know, hang on to those guys. Not to say that those guys were, you know, guys that the Blue Jays were really, really eager to retain. But, you know, taking a gander at the available starting pitchers in free agency this year, I think there's a lot of intriguing options that the Blue Jays would be very inclined to go after, as opposed to spending, you know, I don't know, $30, $40 million on, say, Anthony Desclafani.
Former Blue Jay great Anthony Desclafani, after all. Again, I feel like the like a Jose Berrios type deal seems more in line with how the front office is likely to act, and paying, you know, a minimal cost in terms of the guys are giving up, you know, in terms of what those guys represent to you, where they lie on the, you know, depth chart, and what the team thinks about them, and not that, again, as my position on this has been clear many times before, which is I don't want to trade. If I'm the Blue Jays, I'm not looking to trade a guy and have him show up and be no good, right? I'm happy for if the Blue Jays are able to trade a guy and they get him to camp and then he gets to be something, right? There's belief. As I've said a million times, I'd like for there to be belief in the player development that the Blue Jays are investing so heavily in. So yeah, maybe like one of those lower end guys. You know, there's going to be lots of pitching out there, I think, as well. You know, in terms of you think about what are the Padres going to do? Where, like, are they going to have to reload? Are they going to have to, you know, unload? Are they, you know, there's always the Rays, right? God only knows what the Rays are going to want to do. Is Tyler Glass not going to be a Ray next year? Is anybody, like there's a lot of things to consider. And, you know, God, Michael Pineda, I don't even want to think about that.
He would be a great fit just based on the clear approach the Blue Jays have, which is get the most enormous pitchers on the planet. Manoa, Ryu, Pearson, Big Mike would fit in tremendously in that regard.
He would be a great fit, unlike Michael Pineda, in a standard airline seat. Because that is all kinds of man. I made this joke on Twitter. Like, he cannot get his pants made normally. Like, he buy them normally. He cannot buy off the rack.
No chance.
He would wear the rack before he would wear pants off the rack. Bless Big Mike, Michael Pineda. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate. But first, check this out.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Another name that's on Caitlin's list, and again, someone else that I know that you have opinions on, is Nate Pearson. So, number one, do you think Nate Pearson is going to figure prominently into the rotation in 2022? And why not?
I think he's going to be given every opportunity to earn a rotation spot, and as he should be. Like, we have rhapsodized about his stuff for so long. We saw him harness it for most of September in a relief role. And it's time for him to get that opportunity to start and run with it. You know, outside of Pearson, there aren't a ton of internal candidates who are really going to be fighting, you know, arriving in Dunedin, contending for a rotation spot. After him, it's like, you know, Thomas Hatch and Zach Lowe, guys with either minimal or no big league experience. So I think there's going to be a very real opportunity there for Nate Pearson, irrespective of whether or not, you know, they bring in, you know, a low end starting pitcher via free agency. You know, if this team is going to reach its ceiling, I think that includes Nate Pearson pitching effectively in a starting role. And, you know, as much as he enjoyed his first sort of stretch of success in the big leagues this year, pitching in relief, it's still too early, I believe, to commit to him as a full-time reliever. And I think the Blue Jays recognize that as well. And I think that his potential is going to factor into their offseason approach too, with respect to who they go out and get. Like, I don't think that, you know, they're going to load up on back end starting pitching free agents at the expense of Nate Pearson getting an opportunity. Like, he's going to be in the mix, and in my mind, he absolutely should be.
Other names, of course, that are in the mix for guys who will get starts, you know, Anthony K, who you have a personal vendetta against. I find it a little bit on the ugly side. Ross Stripling, who is, Ross Stripling put some good work in for the Blue Jays this year. You know, I think it's easy to remember the bad starts and easy to remember him getting shelled, but it was really effective when he made that change and was very much like, I got to fix this or otherwise I'll be out of the big leagues. He did, so he did well.
So he's definitely getting tendered a contract.
I think so. I think so. What did you, I don't know if you have remember offhand what was his ARB reward as calculated by Matt Schwartz and the folks
about,
that
about $4.5 million,
which is fine. Like who's scoffing at that for Ross Stripling for what he gives for the other thing I would say is like the value in terms of what you know about him if you're the Blue Jays as a guy who listens and a guy who gets it. So according to MLB Trade Rumors, the projected arbitration salaries for 2022, Ross Stripling comes in at $4.4 million. So that's not to say that that's gospel what it was going to be, but I don't think it's fair to say it'll be on either side of that, you know, a couple $100,000. But I love the idea of Nate Pearson starting, and I love the idea that he went out every other day and pitched this season, and it went really well. He learned, I think, he hopefully was able to recognize that like my stuff's really good and I just need to throw it. I need to throw, just pump, not pump it down the middle, but obviously like just be aggressive and I can get guys out and they have a hard time barreling me. And the other thing I think I hope was the thing that maybe being in the bullpen can teach a guy like Nate Pearson that a guy like Alek Manoah doesn't need to learn. And Alek Manoah pitched in the SEC. He pitched games that needed to matter for his program, for, you know, his school, for his team. You know, he learned to pitch when he was hungover, which I wouldn't suggest that he's doing in the big leagues. But being able to pitch when you're not at your best, being able to recognize that a pitch isn't working and go to other pitches, to be able to experiment, to be able to sort of figure things out and grind and gut it out. And I think we saw such great stuff from Pearson, but also just pitching every other day through the stretch run and in higher, as increasingly high leverage spots too. My hope is that he'll be able to take some of those lessons and take some of that, you know, A, the ability to simplify and B, the ability to kind of change gears as required. I think that's a big part of being a starting pitcher in the big leagues. And I'm hoping that this sort of trial run in the bullpen gave him the opportunity to learn things that he didn't necessarily learn, you know, pitching in junior college and then pitching, yeah, coming up through the minor leagues where, you know, they try to, you know, it's a tough balance to strike, I think, in the minor leagues in terms of wanting to win, wanting it to be like a bit of a laboratory, but also wanting to protect an arm and a guy with like Pearson who has been hurt so much. So it's like he's been in rehab, constant rehab starts for almost his entire time as a professional. So letting him kind of like take the guide wires off, let him sort of just go. Hopefully will be the best thing for him.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, this past September when he was called up, that was really the first time he's had sort of an uninterrupted stretch at the big league level. Like last year, he made 4 starts before he got hurt and was shut down for, you know, effectively the entire season. You know, this is the first time he got into a groove and was able to really just focus on, you know, like you said, learning how to attack guys, learning how to make adjustments, because so many of his other developmental opportunities were fraught by those other factors. So yeah, I'm optimistic. I mean, you know, you see a guy who's pumping 100 with a good slider, and he didn't really use his changeup all that much in relief, but you know, the stuff is there and we've been saying that for a long time. And I believe the opportunity is going to be there for him to run with a starting job. He just has to do it.
So I'll just ask you a couple more. We don't need to be here all day, but this will take time. So let me ask you about the bullpen. What do you think would make for a successful winter in for the Blue Jays bullpen? Obviously, there's going to be big names out there. There was some talk, would have been Storm and Bob Nightingale, I think, made a comment today about maybe the White Sox picking up Craig Kimbrell's option and then looking to trade him. Are you in the mindset of like the Blue Jays need to go like with an arm like that, with somebody who has a huge high ceiling, a huge track record, but also like a big potential opportunity or acquisition cost, or someone who's going to need to come in and do a very specific role? Or are you good with the group that they've got? I think you would be crazy if you said yes to that question, just FYI. So what do you think? What makes for a successful offseason in terms of the bullpen for 2022?
I mean, I think it would be, I think it's necessary for them to add another sort of role five reliever who they're comfortable in trusting and leverage. Most of the guys right now who were pitching, you know, the late innings in 2021 were kind of role specific. You know, Simber, you don't really trust against lefties. You know, Meza, he had a really nice season against righties, but, you know, you don't necessarily have the most confidence against, say, you know, the meat of the Yankees lineup with Meza going. You know, they really only had Romano, who, like, you know, you can throw out there irrespective of, you know, the who's due up, handedness, and have confidence that he's going to get it done, miss bats, you know, protect the lead. So I do think that they need to add one other guy for the late innings, but I think just given the nature of how pitch design and pitcher development has evolved in the last 3, 4, 5 years, they don't need to necessarily empty their wallets or their prospect cupboard for, say, a Craig Kimbrell. You know, Kendall Graveman's going to be available this offseason too, and he had a monster year this year. There are guys like that with, I think, high leverage, not only potential, but experience who they could get for considerably cheaper. But, you know, they add sort of one of those guys who you're maybe entrusting with the setup role, and all of a sudden it bumps everyone down a peg, and you're feeling pretty good about the bullpen, I think. Considering where they were in May and June with their relief corps, I think they did a really nice job of revamping it and making it passable for the stretch run. And, you know, a lot of those guys are still in place. You know, Simber's going to be under control for a while. So is Trevor Richards. Obviously, Jordan Romano is, and Tim Meza is too. So that's not a bad core. I think they just need one more guy that can take some of the pressure off some of those guys who are maybe better suited to situational roles.
Yeah, I think that the point about the acquiring these players who weren't immediately, you know, not rentals, the guys that are going to be around, Richards, Simber, being the two, even Jacob Barnes, yeah, who is, you know, just a guy, but, you know, you never know. I think that the what we learned last year watching this team is that every bullpen is fraught with volatility and injury lurking around every corner. So to not address it with some, like, guys that you expect to have significant roles, as well as the kind of flyery guys that the Blue Jays have shown a pretty good ability to identify and bring in and get some value from, in terms of, you know, even like AJ Cole or what's the guy, Anthony, the fish guy, Anthony Bass, as like a guy that they're able to bring in, you know, with that low cost or low acquisition cost, but then also get a lot of good stuff out of him, and then have him go off and sign a nice deal that he earned by pitching so well. Here's a name for you. David Phelps. Sign him back. Bring him home.
Why not? I mean, it's not going to cost you anything. You know, after missing the majority of this season, he made 11 appearances, and in 2020 was on aggregate ineffective because he gave up a billion home runs. Sure, why not bring him back? Bring him back. I mean, that's not a guy who, even if he's sort of realizing his 90th percentile projections, is pitching the eighth inning for a World Series contending Toronto Blue Jays team, but. Yeah, there are guys like that.
Why not? Good enough for Daniel Hudson. Good enough for David Phelps.
Yeah.
But he give up one run?
I think Hudson's
run?
Available too, right?
Yeah. All those guys are out there. So I like that idea, the ability to just stack arms on arms and continue to see. There are also some interesting guys, I think, in the Blue Jays system that maybe we could see. You know, there are the more obvious names, some guys that need to get added to the 40-man roster. And then the name that I shared with you today, Fitz Stadler, my guy, Fitz Stadler, who's 6'9" and throws 100 miles an hour. Free up Fitz Stadler.
Just, you need a donkey, you know, you need a donkey in the pen. You need a John Rauch. Or your bullpen's incomplete, and a 6'9", 245 triple digit hucking monster is necessary. It's just necessary.
More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The other piece of business that we may or may not see this winter is, what about an extension for one of the existing position players? There are a number of candidates. Obviously, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will enter arbitration for the first time. Bo Bichette is not arbitration eligible yet, as he's not a Super 2. Teoscar Hernandez, I believe, is entering his last year of arbitration. Does that sound right? Or has he got two more years?
I think his penultimate year of arbitration.
You know, Lourdes Gurriel, no one needs to worry about him with contracts.
He's on a super friendly contract, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, you know, even Danny Jansen is now into arbitration. Do any of these players attract you or worry you, or what are the things you might want to see before, if you are the Toronto Blue Jays, sliding a piece of paper with a big old number on it across the table to any of those player representatives?
I mean, those two key guys, right? The sort of obvious extension candidates, they're just so early into their careers and they're still very much developing. And, you know, it's really tough to say. I mean, I certainly wouldn't be opposed to the Blue Jays sliding, you know, a 13-year contract under Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s nose and, you know, making him into a statue. But at the same time, you know, he's coming off one of the greatest seasons ever offensively for a 22-year-old. I don't know if this is the right value point for the Blue Jays to do that. It's certainly possible that it is. And he only continues to get better and more expensive. Hell, who knows? Maybe he moves back to third base and gets himself left side of the infield money as opposed to first baseman money.
You're out of your mind. That's amazing.
I mean, I don't know who's playing third base for this team next year. Do you?
Yeah. His name is Jose Ramirez.
He's
under contract in Cleveland. Mm-hmm.
So, and then with Bo Bichette, you know.
Well, sorry.
No, go ahead.
The first thing I'll say with Vlad, and this is something that I remember Shai Davidi said when I had him on this show, which is like, maybe you want to see him do it again. Not because you don't think he can hit, because you want to see him show up and show that commitment to the fitness aspect that is very clearly integral to his success. Because that's a lot to ask. To work at that level, to do what it takes. It's a lot to ask, but also it's like, if I'm giving you $300 million, that's what I'm going to ask. So I'm not going to necessarily give it to you until we can have an agreement that this is how it needs to work. So that's my only, I kind of get that. You know me and the people who listen to this show know me that I'm like, give everybody their money. But like, that would be my only pause is come back and show us, you know, and that, like, even Miguel Cabrera, right? Miguel Cabrera went through this. Miguel Cabrera, you know, because I'm trying to find the right way to say that Miguel Cabrera was an alcoholic or was a problem drinker and got himself into trouble a bunch of times and then was able to kind of, like, you know, get well, and it didn't deter from his progress as a baseball player, which is secondary to his growth as a person and that wellness. But, you know, that was something that he had to solve in order to continue to be the best player, the best hitter in the game. And I'm not suggesting that Vlad's fitness and alcohol issues with Miguel Cabrera are the same, but I'm going to need to see it from you, because we know what you can do. We've seen what you can do. Do it even a little bit. Come to spring training in shape. Come to spring training ready to go. Be the same. Be at that same fitness level. Do the things that needed to be done all winter. And then that's when, in the old days especially, when you get those contracts done, like first week of April, if if spring training goes and you show up and are doing the things you need to be done, bang, I'm all for whatever you want to pay him at that point.
And I also think with Vlad, he set himself up so well for his first season of arbitration financially that like he's going to get so paid throughout the arbitration process, and he's poised to hit free agency after what is age 25 or 26 season. Like for him, I think to sign one of those, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. contracts right now, you're going to probably have to overpay. Like he doesn't need the money, right? He's Vladimir Guerrero's son. And he's going to make, you know, $70 million through the arbitration process, all told.
Here's my guess. Right now, he's according to the same Matt Schwartz that we referenced earlier, set to earn in and around $8 million this time through arbitration. If nothing else changes, which it almost for sure will, but even with the structure as it was, he would be my guess would be like 8, 12, 16, 20. Even if it's a little bit less, 8, 11, 14, 20, something like that, right? You think about the trajectory that like Mookie Betts was on, like even, you know, Cody Bellinger got $10 million his first time through. I think it went, probably was a year later and after having won the Cy Young, but or the MVP. But like, so what's that, right? That's $50 or $60 million, which I think is the number that you just said by the time he passes.
I was a little higher, yeah. But after he wins the 2022 American League Appeal Award, you know, that's going to escalate his earnings as well.
You're burying Shohei Ohtani now? You got him in the grave?
I don't know how many innings Ohtani's going to throw next year.
He'll never do it again.
It's, exactly. You saw it once, you'll tell your grandkids and that's it.
He'll never do it again. It's too hard.
Yeah.
It's too hard. It's crazy that he did
why,
it.
Why do you think he crumbled? Crumbled is strong. Why do you think he slowed down in the second half? Because he's a human being, and human beings can't pitch every 6 day and also hit every single day at the big league level and not collapse physically
and run the bases to and hit triples and steals. Fuck.
Yeah. But ultimately,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but ultimately I think to get Vlad at this point, given the leverage that he's afforded himself and the leverage that he arrived in Major League Baseball with financially being the son of Vladimir Guerrero, you're going to have to overpay. You're going to have to really give him a outrageous amount of money to get him to sign away, you know, the bulk of his free agent years. So I don't know that this is the right time for the Blue Jays. And I would be surprised if they got an extension done with him this offseason. I would also be surprised if they got an extension done with Bo Bichette, because I think that he made considerable strides defensively at shortstop this year. I think that he had a really nice season in spite of his utter lack of selectivity at the plate. And you know, he was great. He was an all-star, you know, almost a 5-win player, outstanding, but I think there are questions. Ultimately, is he a shortstop long-term? I don't know. If they go out and sign Marcus Semien, or Corey Seager, you know, does Bo Bichette end up at second base? I don't know. Is the success he enjoyed this year replicable, with the approach that he has? Because it's hard, man. It's really hard, as you and I were talking about earlier, to swing at every single pitch. I think he had the fourth highest swing rate in big league baseball this year and produce offensively at a rate that's 23% better than league average. So, yeah, I think the Blue Jays are going to want to answer some questions about him before they slide him, you know, a contract worth $75 million less than Fernando Tatis Jr. Because, you know, you look at the numbers that he's put up through his first effectively season and a half in the big leagues. They're really, really good. They, you know, if you're looking solely at the numbers, they warrant a massive, massive deal. And I don't know that the Blue Jays right now are prepared to make that level of investment, given the questions that still exist about Bo Bichette's game.
That is a little bit scary. That I agree with you.
That's terrifying.
No,
I know, kids. I'm scared too.
But to be that, to have him in that same breath as Tatis Jr., I think it probably would give a lot of people pause. His batted ball profile, you know, on Baseball Perspectives, like similar batters is like Ian Desmond, Wilson Ramos, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Like maybe not the statue contract types. who you're maybe not as eager to sign for $200 million or more. I am very happy to be patient with Bo Bichette if I'm the Blue Jays. No matter what happens with the CBA, like, he's going to get paid because he's good and he's having great years. And there are questions about his defense. There are questions about the ability to make the decisions he makes at the plate. But if I'm the Blue Jays, I think I would say that I'm happy to pay through the nose to be repeatedly proven wrong. Like, I'm happy to pay for the pleasure of paying for the production that Bo Bichette creates after the fact. Like, I feel good about that because it's not an approach that you would teach. There is risk in it. So if I'm like, you know what, prove me wrong, and I'll cut a check, and I'll cut a check if you have another 4 or 5 win year and you hit how many home runs did he hit this year? 29. If you hit 30 home runs next year and you have an OBP of 340, 350, 320, is it's going to cost me a lot of money? And I'm okay with that. I will happily, and that's something that Alex Anthopoulos, you know, used to say, which was, you know, when in those earlier days, 2012, 2013, that's when it was like pre-arb deals everywhere. Everyone was getting arb deals and 2 years of options and 3 years of options. And in a lot of ways, it's like arbitration those are option years in a lot of ways. And I don't think that given the way that he produces, it's a bad thing to pay him after the fact and let him continually, if he wants to go year to year and you are like, if you keep building this case and you keep making huge arb rewards, oh well, like darn, here I am paying out the nose for a 5-win shortstop every year in and year out. Like, to me, I'm very comfortable doing that. It's not my money, but
I mean, the cautionary tale for the early arb extension for a player who swings at every pitch is right there in right field, or I guess sitting on the bench now in Randall Grichuk, right? I think with the high risk approach. I'm with you.
Rolling my eyes. You did this on purpose. You set me up. You did this just to get me.
I did no such thing. There's no trolling here.
There's 100% trolling. The goddamn Randall Grichuk contract. It's fine. He makes nothing. He makes baseball peanuts.
He takes up a roster spot. That's the problem. It's not the financial cost. It's the opportunity cost.
But that's not what most people's beef with it is. If everyone was like, oh, I can't believe they extended him, they should have just let him go through arbitration and then walk and hit free agency. Okay. I think they were a little bit afraid of the Players Association at that time, going into 2019, because they didn't have anybody to give their money to.
Marcus Stroman.
He didn't want it. You just used Randall Grichuk and Bo Bichette in the same breath. You did it. Oh my God. I'm so mad.
All I'm saying is, with players with extreme approaches, who are very, very early in their big league careers, you can wait. And I'm with you. I'd rather pay up big after being proven wrong than, you know, overcommit to a guy who is, you know, once pitchers just stop throwing him pitches in the zone, is going to put up an OBP of 308. And I think Bo Bichette's going to be a really good player.
288.
Well, I wanted to steer away a little bit from the Grichuk the Grichuk comp, but there's obviously some risk in waiting, but I think it's the right move. It's the right move, especially because there's so many other guys that they could give their money to. Go extend Jose Barrios. Go do that.
Yeah, I'm into that. I would rather extend Jose Barrios over any of them.
Yep,
I'm with you. Including Teoscar Hernandez.
Yep, I'm with you.
Who I love, like also, one of my own children. But I don't know.
He swings at everything, and he's a really good hitter. But he also had a 350 BABIP this year, and
he hits the ball hard as fuck. Oh, this podcast gone off the rails. He hits the ball hard. There's everything to love about Teoscar Hernandez, but there is risk in his approach. Like, he's, and to use your word, is swing decisions. Like, which is that it's always a swing decision. Swing is the decision, period, end of story.
There's nothing to decide. He's swinging.
Yeah. because you can hit. I can barrel that. I'll stick him. Who is this guy out of that Lenny Dykstra story about Steve Carlton?
The greatest left-hander of all time.
Who's that old fart out there? Yeah. It's Steve Carlton.
Billy Beane is like shaking in his boots, absolutely terrified, and Lenny Dykstra is too ignorant to be scared. You gotta admire that.
You do. Especially when it comes to the police, when you're like, I'm not afraid of you. You can't stop me, John Law. And then you're in prison.
Jose Barrios, though, 27-year-old Jose Barrios, with his high floor, his pretty high ceiling, and his track record of durability, lock him up for sure. That I would have no hesitation about. I mean, obviously he's on the precipice of free agency, but you have him and Manoa anchoring the rotation for the next half decade or so. That's a pretty solid foundation to build upon.
I'm making a face that you can see, but they can't. And that's like, maybe I give Robbie Ray's money to Jose Barrios.
I was thinking that too.
Feel pretty good about it in the end.
He's 27. Robbie Ray's 30.
Both ancient, aged men, decrepit, graying senior citizens in the on this team in particular.
The bones are their money.
I'm looking through this arbitration list, thinking about players that the Blue Jays can like ransack. Like, oh yeah, yoinks, take me one of those. Mostly like looking at Pirates. Like which guy are the Pirates least likely to value appropriately? And then yoink. Maybe you don't want to deal with the Pirates because what's his name?
Charrington.
Charrington knows the system too well. He'll make non-Pirate choices. Yeah.
Exactly.
Jonah, I don't want to take too much more of your time. Tell the people where they can find you on social media, where they can get your hot, flaming takes.
Yeah, hit me up on Twitter, on Instagram, at Birenball, B-I-R-E-N-B-A-L-L. I'm there, usually infuriating someone with some baseball take. Hit me up.
Hit him up and wish him and the Dodgers, who are my former men's league club, the best as they head into the semifinals. Rain might be threatening the weekend, but the Dodgers, with their ace on the hill, although he doesn't have... the other half of the battery making the right calls, putting down the right fingers at the right time. But I'm sure he'll persevere.
What I will say is that you, my friend, were the key to my turnaround on the mound this season. I was having a bit of an up and down season, but then you came in for the nightcap of a doubleheader. You caught the whole game. I think I allowed one over the minimum, by far my strongest outing of the year. And since then, I've been a pitcher transformed. You're the Pete Walker to my Robbie Ray, our improbable run to the championship. I don't think happens without you stepping in that day.
I don't think that's unfair to say. I don't think that's unfair to say at all. I think it's very fair to say. All right, his name is Jonah Birenbaum. My name is Drew Fairservice, and it was my pleasure to have him on the show. It was my pleasure to have the opportunity to speak with you. And we'll be back again in no time with Caitlin McGrath on the very next edition of Spin Rate.